We're just gonna kick it off how you knew we was gonna kick it off.
Mm-hmm.
How often do you get, people anticipating to meet Tom Thibodeau's son?
Actually, I've never.
He wasn't expecting that.
I never got that one.
I always wanted to play for Tom Thibodeau at some point in my career. Never got to. When I saw the name, immediately.
That's the only other Thibodeau I know.
That's crazy though. People don't ever anticipate you being connected.
I mean,
before they see you, obviously.
Yeah. I was gonna say, probably not.
So the theme of today's show is owning your narrative and not letting me anticipate that you're Tom Thibodeau's son. When you hear the phrase, owning your narrative, what comes to your mind?
I would say just controlling, what you can control, right? When you come and you start to do media, you understand that they ask the questions, but you control the answer, right? So, not only that, but then every piece of work or piece of art that you put out is a reflection of who you are, what your brand is, and what you represent.
How do you feel like the athletes in today's game, how you feel like they're empowered by telling their own story?
I would say that now, through social media and all of the other outlets, they've been more, controllable mediums. Before it was just kind of, the big companies who put out, a lot of information, and now everybody kind of controls their own narrative, right? This is a example of that, and having your show, having a former player show where you get to control, what stories are put out there. So nowadays you see athletes from, as young as high school and on being able to, express who they are and put themselves out there.
Where does that interest come from?
I would say for me personally, you talk about how we see in the mainstream media everything being kind of contorted to push a message, and now that we can control our messaging and we can be a vessel and be an outlet for other athletes in the next generation, I think it's all for the better.
Who are some of the athletes that you view as the pioneers for the medium that you talk about? I like that you called it a medium.
I would say, obviously, you got LeBron as a big one. I mean, you guys are a testament to it. When you talk about, I think Kyrie Irving is a big testament to it, mm-hmm. and kind of going against the, and not necessarily going against the grain, but standing in your own light and being able to represent, who you stand up for.
But like you said, sometimes controlling your narrative can be viewed as combative.
Exactly.
You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. Because you won't allow somebody to come in and just say what it is or what it is that you do or what you're trying to push out. I think sometimes standing in your own, though controversial, mm-hmm. It brings enough attention to tell your own story and to get everything on the right track so people understand you. Because I think that a lot of athletes have been able to do things away from the court, away from the field. And like you said, there's still that bigger ceiling over them kind of controlling how much can be said and what could be told, what jewels we're grabbing out of that paragraph. I think it's cool that now we have so many guys that can control that narrative, because I think it's cool to see the bravery in what they have to say.
Exactly.
And what they want to do. We were diving into some of your stuff. We got to see you doing a lot of the stuff. We were talking about it, the organic community service stuff, the stuff that's not I don't know what you guys' stuff is called. Ours was NBA Cares.
Mm-hmm.
We have to do our mandatory appearances and everything, but it's cool a lot of times to see what guys do for back home.
Exactly.
That they don't post, they don't promote, being able to have these mediums if they don't want to promote it. A lot of times we do a lot of investigative work to find it and pull it out so that people do hear about it, because that's the cool stuff about the narrative that we don't get.
It's funny when you talk about that, because there are a lot of big athletes that represent a city or a town. And the old school guys, the Charles Barkley's, the Michael Jordan's, the old school guys, you always hear about them and how, they either did or didn't impact the city on a local level, and what they did in the community. So for me, it was like coming from a big city of Los Angeles and understanding how, it's a big city. So sometimes there are a lot of pockets of the city that are overlooked. And now being in New York, you got to stand for something. And there are a lot of young kids that look up to us and expect us to be the role models. So now it's like, what tangibleness can you bring to the table for them? And how can you, be that mentor that they don't have?
We played in New York. My brother was actually out there with me, living with me at the time. Can you talk about that spotlight from the New York City media?
I would definitely say, you know, that it's a small window. You know, if you play in a big, if you play in a small city, you got time to get better. Yeah. You know, you got time to put the shit back on the right course. But in New York, under the microscope, it's very, you know, limited, right? It's always, you know, you only got a 15-minute segment to show why you're the best. And, you know, now for me being on this big stage, I think it just only allows me to get to my greatness on a faster pace.
Compared to L.A., do you feel like it's too intense?
You know, it's funny. So, you know, when you compare, like, the fandom to L.A., like, no one's a real fan in L.A., you know, if we're in L.A., you can see LeBron walk by and you'll still just stand in line to get your coffee.
He said wow. it. He said it.
Yeah,
that's the truth. But in New York, you see.
He spoke on this on his own, guys.
Yeah, you see somebody in New York walk by, everybody's going to stop the show and, you know, go, you know, pay homage or pay respect to the athlete or the entertainer or whoever
it
is.
It's really like that?
Say it again.
I said it's really like that?
In comparison to L.A.? Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
So y'all are cooler.
I mean, now don't get me wrong, not LeBron himself, but
that's what I was going to say. I'm like,
you talk about when Westbrook was there. I mean, dudes was.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Dudes was walking past him, like, and I'm like, yo, you guys know who this is?
It's Russell Westbrook.
But that's L.A. That's everybody's a superstar in L.A.
Everybody, all the superstars come there, so they're expecting.
Yeah, it's Hollywood.
Copy. I think New York media to me, it's crazy because initially when I got to New York, they warned me of the media. They like told me this media would come, it's up and down, stay even keel. I felt like I had a good preparation for it. And because I was just a Chicago kid and y'all had a lockout for a bunch of months, I was just like, I don't care. And then it wasn't real to me. We got halfway through the season.
Come on.
And I felt how real the media was. We went on like our first losing streak. It would have been like 3 games straight. It's early on. To me, I just lost 3 games. I'm mad about the games, but I'm like not thinking we replacing our coach. Yeah, like, they like coaches on the hot seat. Yeah. I'm like, what?
Hey, your rookie probably a bust.
Yeah,
he was the worst pick
they
ever.
Like, Iman, they like, he injury prone. I'm like, dang, he fell on my leg.
Yeah.
How was I supposed to? What am I, invincible? Like, what is this?
You supposed to
people
be.
People get hurt. I'm like, people get hurt. What's going on? They're like, Stat don't want to be here. Melo don't want to be here. I'm like, what? I just got here. I love playing with these guys.
Yeah,
like,
this is fun to us. I still like my job.
I'm like, we having a good time. We lost the game, but it was like the whole city felt like, oh, man, we need a change. We need a trade. And I was like, wow, this is real. All from the media typing up a quick article about a hot seat. And now all the fans we not trusting?
And I'm going to tell you, me, like, I'm a guy, I hold that stuff. I'll see who wrote it, you know, because then they come in next Wednesday, and now they're trying to sit by the locker and have a conversation. It's like, nah, man, after you ask the questions, get out of here. There's nothing else for me to say.
Yeah,
we're not friends. We're here to do our jobs. That's it.
You say you're an L.A. guy. We from Chicago, but.
Chicago guys.
Yeah. Compare, like you already did it as far as how people walk past and deal with stars, but just compare the cities. How do you like just the city and like, cause I loved New York. That was nice.
That's nice. Part of the show.
Yeah, that was, we planned that. Yeah. how different is it and how much do you like the difference in saying I'm growing up in LA and now I get a dose of New York in a way? Cause I know for a while, East Coast, West Coast, people like either like the West Coast and hate New York or, you know what I'm saying, love New York and be like, I need to get away from home.
So I would say that L.A. people love New York. New Yorkers don't like people from L.A.
What are the differences?
It's everybody too laid back in L.A. So, like, now when I go back to L.A., I got road rage. I'm like, yo, no one has anywhere to go. I'm like, yo, what's
so
up?
New Yorker?
Right. Like, what's up? Like, and it's funny, in L.A., if you honk at somebody, you got to be ready to, don't know where that honk is going to go. You know, it's like, your life is on the line when you honk at somebody in L.A., all right? And New York, honk is just like a good morning, how you doing, wake up,
move.
You know?
Or a move.
It's a move, yeah, it's everything.
A move. I got to go to work. I got to get there right
everybody
now.
Everybody is, you know, and that's why I say I love New York, because it's a place for young people to chase their dreams. Now, I feel like LA is as well, but it's bougie. You know, it's more like people aren't helping each other. People aren't, you know, it's kind of like the high society group. You know, when you make it in and when you prove yourself, then LA is a place to strive. But New York is a place where no matter what your background is or demographic, you could make something out of yourself.
Yeah, I've always loved the blue collar New York. I felt like that's why I like playing there, and that's why they adapted to me. I play a blue collar style game, and they're a blue collar city. Like I always like it's like I used to get like the most love. The biggest sport fans to me are like the people that work for the city.
Come on, you know that.
You see what I'm saying? They got the reflective jackets, the vest. They got the hard hats.
Yeah. Shout out to the sanitary workers.
You know what I'm saying? They sit outside and they see you getting into your car. Hey, y'all win that game, man. I love what y'all doing out there, man. Don't listen to the media. They be like, don't listen to them. We love y'all.
We love y'all, man.
Keep going.
That was my favorite part.
That's my favorite part of New York. I used to get hugs, real hugs from people that had them jackets.
That make up the community.
They really make the city, and they know the city. Like you, if you late and they see you in the car, they're like, hey man, go on the shoulder. You good? You a Nick? Go by us. You good? That's a Nick. He good. They'll take you to the stadium yourself if they had lights they'll take you to the stadium. But they really love their sports, and I always loved that. I always loved going there. I always felt like I should always have something to do while I'm in New York, because they will make you feel like you are the laziest ever. Like you are so lazy.
Get up on your ass.
Yeah, they be moving fast. They got something to do, somebody to talk to, a call to ignore. You know what I'm saying? They got something to do, something they got to be doing. So I always appreciated New York for that. It kept me on my job, kept me on the hustle.
That's what it is. Yeah. They want to make sure you still working.
Keep me on the line. Mm-hmm. What's the biggest misconception you had about living in New York before you got there?
That was a good one. A misconception about New York?
Yeah.
Is that... Well,
for you.
I was going to say that everybody's mean, but nah, everybody is pretty mean. everybody is pretty mean in New York, but I would say...
But it keep you on the straight and narrow.
It
but it's
does.
Not, they don't mean. Hold it to you, though. They're mean, but it's still love.
It's not personal.
Yeah, right? Yeah, it's rude.
Yes, it's just like a... But you like it because you'd rather have people be real than like... They fake like they. That's LA. LA, everybody fake like they like each other. Like, you know, like in
like,
LA,
hey.
All of these people would have walked over here. This is like some New York shit. Like, we're having our drinks. We don't really care that much. And I appreciate it though, because it's like, shit, hey. At least you know the people here really care.
Real talk. Y'all really care. Y'all must be New Yorkers.
Yeah, you got
to be New Yorkers.
Somewhere on the East Coast. Yeah. Appreciate that.
So you were at the start of that NIL movement, so to speak. You were at Oregon. Take us back to what's that like when the financial landscape finally changed for athletes?
Yeah, so I take you back to like 2021. It was like, I think July 6th. Yeah, I think it was July 6th, 2021 was the day the mandate kind of changed in NIL, for those who don't know his name, image and likeness. And basically now college athletes can get paid for their likeness. Shout out to that. These college guys paid. They don't care. get these young guys paid. But you know, when you talk about being able to, you know, reap some of the benefits that all the corporations were already reaping, it's like, it's amazing. It's a new landscape. And the funny part about it is like they didn't think about, you know, and talking about the legislation around it, they didn't think about how to educate guys on getting deals first. They thought about how to regulate the amount of money they were getting, right? So now, if you notice, like, everything's all out of whack and guys are getting paid millions of dollars because they couldn't figure out how to regulate it. Now you hear about GMs and things like that, but during my time, they wanted you to, you know, implement, like they almost tried to tax it at an NCAA level, which was crazy. You know, like, the NCAA thought we were supposed to give them a portion of the funds we were making. It's just crazy. It didn't actually happen, but this is something that they came and tried to talk about. Luckily, it didn't happen. And now, you know, the transition is like, for me, I thought it was so amazing because I was able to, you know, obviously use the funds for life and, you know, family and things like that. But then the NFL side and the professional side, they got to see how college athletes dealt with money. You know, obviously over time you've seen, you know, what happens when, you know, you take 18, 19, 20, 21-year-olds and you turn them into millionaires overnight. There are a lot of different scenarios that can come of that. So now having college athletes being able to, you know, have money and sustain it through college and through the NFL, and it made it a lot easier transition, but it was definitely hard being, you know, one of the first ones. It was definitely a lot of backlash.
Yeah, I'm surprised.
What's the backlash that comes with it?
You know, it's about priorities. You know, that obviously when you play for any or you work for any organization, they want to make sure that you're their top priority, or what they pay you to do is your top priority. And when you're cashing checks, they start to understand that they lose leverage, right? These colleges are losing leverage because guys are getting paid now. So now I get to choose where I go to college, not based off of, oh, needing to make it to the NFL, but based off of the best opportunity for the right now, right? So now guys, the leverage is in the student athlete. So now it's like they lose power essentially. So when you talk about me at the time, it was like, oh, you know, do you care about football, or are you focused, or things like that? And it's like, how could you assume that someone 18, 19 playing video games is more focused on their sport than a kid 18, 19 doing business deals and playing football? You know, it's almost like it was bad. I don't even know how else to put it. It was bad, but I definitely was able to, you know, end up going to the New York Giants, which was the biggest media market in the world. So you talk about, I felt like it worked out perfect.
Yeah, there you go.
God is good.
There you go. All the time. All the time.
Wait, but I was kind of surprised that you said it helped your transition. How do you think it helped? Like, do you think it just made you a little more comfortable?
Well, you know, I started having these conversations earlier, right? So I think where it's hard for a lot of young people is when you go into a big corporation, or you go into, let's just say, a college. These college coaches are talking to you like they're your father. And really, we're 18, 19, 20 years old. So it's like when you can go into a place and you have talked business, you know how to give respect and demand respect. So now I'm able to transition and go into these pro, you know, meetings, and I'm able to pitch myself as an athlete and as a, you know, a brand, rather than just being some young guy trying to get paid, you know?
I never thought of that. You got y'all had a hell of an advantage with that, because the whole time I was in college, I want y'all to know I was broke. I was like real broke. It's crazy to think about that, because like you said, I too used to think, man, I'm not playing no video game. I ain't start playing video games till 2 years ago. Exactly. I started, well, 3 years ago now, when the COVID hit and I had surgery. Like, they was like, figure out something to sit down and play. I got attached to shooting games. Been there ever since. Keep me out of trouble, though.
Yeah.
Don't spend any money while playing it either. $50 one time, ain't coming out the house no more. But I definitely see the feeling of, if I was in college, I wouldn't want a college athlete in his dorm room playing the game. Like, I would want him in the gym or on the field working on your craft. And what better way to do that than say early on, yes, you get a business transaction. You work your ass off. You play well. The boosters and everybody want to boost in and do all that stuff. Then you can bring in a deal with this water company. Go right ahead and make your mistake. Like he's saying, you're able to trial and error. You get to make a mistake. But that's when you want to do it, when you're not getting criticized as a professional grown man. Because that's, like he said, if you give a 19-year-old, once they put on the pro jersey, it's like we give them 30-year-old problems.
Yeah.
You get what I'm saying? You got to think, every athlete within their first 5 years in the pros, they're making enough money on paper to be a 50-year-old man to everybody else. He's dealing with a 50-year-old man problems. You got a 50-year-old man tax bracket. That's the only people that can understand you. They all 50. All of them.
You imagine I'm probably the youngest person in this whole hotel right now. 23.
So and he just sitting here rubbing the shit in. I don't know why he thought to say that shit, but
hey, it's amazing. Thanks.
He like, it's amazing. Like, you just made me the 50-year-old. That's crazy. I'm young still.
You know.
But seriously, you have those kids. You're 19.
You give the man all that money, and then you mad that he made a little hiccup. That man got like 20 years to figure it out. How you mad at him? Because he made it to 50 years old at 19.
Well, I would think it's because you paid him.
Well, I'm just saying they get mad as if they're not judging a 19-year-old with no experience.
The interesting part, too, was they were comparing me with guys who weren't doing deals and just playing video games. So it's like I'm making money and playing football 4.0.
And looking out for my family.
And doing community work. But guys sitting around playing games, they're more dedicated to the sport.
Focused.
They're more focused.
And they're more focused on the innocence of the game.
Come on. So you talk about, you know, it was, and I said this a long time ago. I said, it's funny how they want us to play a game and everybody else is doing business.
Crazy.
Oh, they are playing a game. No, I forgot. They all playing a game.
I like how you said
it. You know what I'm saying? Everybody else doing business.
That.
That went over there.
Luckily,
head.
Everybody else doing business. We usually got the sound effects that come with it, man. We usually got the sound effects that come with it. Boy, I wish y'all would have came, got me. July 6, 2021.
Come on. Hey.
No, you didn't need it.
I got one more year in school if anybody.
You didn't need it. You didn't need it.
Bro, yeah.
You'd have ruined your life. Yeah, he'd have ruined his life.
I think it would have grew me up. I wouldn't have did a lot of the stuff because it's like, yeah, I got money now. I don't have a used car. Like, I had a used beat up.
I still got it, by the way. Still got my 98 Chevy Blazer. I just cut the top off it. Wonderful car.
We don't care.
You don't. They don't even care. They having drinks. They having a good time. Yeah, I still got my car, but if I would have been able to have a Ferrari, I feel like I would have played better against Clemson. Yeah. You know what I'm saying? Like, if you pull up in a Ferrari or, like, a McLaren, you just play a little bit better that day. Like, I'm not losing. Y'all took the team bus here. I pulled up in my Ferrari.
See, this is why it's not.
They was mad
idea.
At me because I wanted to start wearing suits. I wanted to start pulling up in suits every game because I
that's
got the money
crazy.
Now.
See,
you know what I'm saying?
That's that 50-year-old man shit I'm talking about, man. All grown men.
Your friends.
He looking like everybody in the front row. He looking like everybody in the celebrity row at the Knicks game.
Come on,
he looking like all them. Look how he dressed now. I respect it, brother. Hey, don't let me discourage you, brother. Don't let me discourage you at all. You do your thing. You've been doing. You hear me? What do you think of some of the contradictions that y'all still have with the NIL?
I would just say there needs to be a little more education around it, man. There needs to be, you know, a lot more mentorship in it. You know, a lot of guys are trying to basically fend for themselves in a wild jungle. And a lot of great things are happening, obviously. But, you know, I think there's a it's just a lack of understanding of the reality of it. You know, we think that everybody's getting paid. People are in a transfer portal. People are kind of dictating their futures on, you know, the money. And it's like, you know, money is short term. And, you know, depending on where you go and your the work you put in your sport or your school, that'll take you farther.
I've always I think the biggest thing for me with the NIL, I think it's cool because we've all played with those guys in college where they say, you know, when they like say it early, like he's going to be a great college player. I just don't know if it translates to the pros.
Now they can just stay in college. They can just stay in college.
You feel me? That guy that you know, like he's killing in college, but it's like you're not big enough to do that in the pros. They're going to change your position or you might have to but they love you here in this college town. You can make your bang and your dollar 4 years.
You know, it's
get on up out of there with a
women's
degree.
Women's basketball is a big testament to that. These girls are getting paid in college.
Get your money.
I'd be in college for 6 years if I was. They get paid as much as they are in the WNBA. It's crazy. It's crazy.
That's what I was going to say, though.
Finagle,
that's
where he the red shirt and everything.
Because she's going to make more money if somebody
but
else.
But you think about like a Juju Watkins. Okay. I don't know if she's a young girl. She's a freshman at USC. She's about to get paid more than anybody will ever see in college sports. So it's like, why would I even care about going if
why you care.
Well, of course. Well, of course.
You know why she's got to go. You got to prove it to yourself. You got to prove it to yourself that you're the best. And I think I do think it takes a little bit of that innocence away.
Yeah,
I do.
It definitely does.
That innocence of
The only reason, though, because a lot of times it's just the generation before hating.
No, that's like, what he said. No, it's
a lot of times it is that, though. It's us hating when we talk about it, and that's why we're not educated on it, because we like, shit, they getting paid now.
Well, like, no, I think, like, well, if I'm going to ask
get it, a lot of people that can't get in on it, they don't get the education.
I still
don't all the way know the ins and outs the way he is. He's way more confident and comfortable in it because he knows it.
But that's what I was going to ask. Like, how much of that do you think is ignorance versus just it being way too new?
As far as NIL and, you know, the mentor stuff. So I would say it's definitely new, but you think about everything else, how fast is AI accelerated? And I just mean that, like, how much time and effort people put into things. The reason they're not putting it into NIL is because the more you pay the athletes, the less. So now watch this. All these collectives that are happening, watch how slow all of these buildings renovate. All these college places, they're not going to have the same amount of money to put into the college anymore because it's going to the players. So you talk about the change in the economics. It's like, why would I continue to help the economics of the athletes when it's taking money out of the university's pocket, if I'm the university, right? So you talk about why is this a conversation?
How are they taking money out of
the donors? Like, if I'm donating my money to my college and they're not paying the athletes, it's just going to the buildings. Think about it. The University of Oregon it looks like Apple. In 20 years from now, it'll still look the same. Why? Because now they're giving players $250, $1 million, millions. And there's money from the donors.
Wow.
So now you got a big donor, like, for example.
So y'all donors, y'all just got to cough up a little bit more.
And that's what the colleges are pushing. Now they're having, they're separate funds. This is the collective for the players, and this is the collective for the college athletic department.
Copy.
You know, so you talk about, you know, it's conflict of interest is all it is when it comes to the finances.
You think that'll hurt schools like Oregon?
No, because we got Phil Knight, so that's definitely not gonna hurt. Cause he was the first advocate. So you back to NIL, he was the first person that did a deal with me, and he helped me get paid individually. And then now the team is getting paid on a grand scale. But when you talk about, you know, other schools who kind of prioritize that kind of the they call it collectives now, but the people who prioritize getting money from the donors are here for the sports. So now you got to prioritize not just the buildings, but, you know, football brings in more fans than girls volleyball or beach, you know, or men's basketball. So now it's like there's not going to be any more. Like Title IX, it might get thrown out the window because of all of this NIL and everything that's going, because they have to, you know, the money is just going to it's nerve-wracking, I'll tell you that. It's nerve-wracking.
He thinking about how much he missed out on.
Like, man, I went from getting $500,000. Now these kids are getting $8 million for 1 year. These quarterbacks getting all, it's crazy. These are NFL contracts that are going out for these young quarterbacks.
That's
And that's why I say women's basketball, watch. These girls are getting paid now.
I love it. They should
I love
be.
It.
They're marketable.
Oh,
they sure are marketing them like they want to get them paid. I've always wondered how I know them and they can't remove themselves away. Like, why they don't got as much money if I know them? Y'all marketing them enough for me to know them.
Come on.
Like, let's make it all make sense. What's the biggest thing you could say you pulled from a Phil Knight when you was at Oregon or after doing that deal?
You said he mentored you, right?
Yeah. Okay. So I think it's the mentorship part, right? It's the reaching back, right? A guy like that who's a billionaire, he's done everything. You know, like he's literally done everything that he probably wanted to do in his lifetime. And understanding that, you know, the power is not just in the chase of the dollar, but it's in the impact that the dollar makes, right? So he's been a guy who's been able to not just impact the University of Oregon, but the whole community around Oregon. He was a track athlete, so he understand a student athlete and understand the dynamics between NIL and things like that. So he made sure that he helped every, you know, and I brought up Title IX because it's going to take, you know, a person like Phil Knight to make sure that the volleyball team, the girls volleyball team gets paid, to make sure that, you know, he's spreading the wealth around to all of these athletes. And, you know, I think it's going to continue to take, you know, more kind of outreach and being tangible from the big players and the big donors and the big people kind of around the corporations. But I think, you know, just having him around helped me, you know, kind of change my dialect and change how I operated from not just a business scale, but then, you know, when cultivating relationships.
How do you think the transfer portal has affected college sports? Because now it seems like you can't get a kid to just stay at a school for not even three years.
You can't force a kid to stay at a school for 3 years. And that's the difference. And that's when I talk about the leverage now that these kids have, because it's like, think about it. If somebody offered you $1 million to go start, what would you do? You taking it, you know, because some of these kids will never have the opportunity to make it to the next level.
But what does that do to the integrity of the sport to say, because what is it? You can go conference to conference?
I think you can go conference. I'm not really sure, to be
like,
honest.
Like, what keeps me from going to, like, I went to Georgia Tech. Yeah. What keep me from, okay, I balled out historically against North Carolina. Can North Carolina just come pay me next year? Like, I don't want to have to deal with dude. Put him on our team.
Yeah,
I'm
going to
pay him a meal.
Mm-hmm.
That's messed up, no?
That's not messed up. That is not messed up. If you work for Nike and Adidas comes and wants to pay you $1 billion and you're going to go take it, that is business. That is – now these young athletes have the power, and I love it. And trust me, it is changing the dynamics, but has college football gotten worse? Are we not going to give the Heisman to the people who deserve the Heisman? Are we not going to watch? Is there not going to be a national championship?
I just don't want to have a brand new team every year. Like, whatever happens to watching a team?
That sound like the NBA.
I've been had a problem with it. I've been said that. I didn't trade myself. They was trading me. I didn't. You feel me? I would have stayed in the same place, brother.
So that's my question. When it was time to get that new contract, if your team didn't want to pay you, what you going to do?
Hey, I literally came back because I lost. I was mad as hell. That's why I came back to Cleveland. Right, I was supposed to go take some money. I left some on the table. You trying to make me feel stupid.
Would you do it? would you do it again? Would you leave that money on the table again?
Hell no.
There goes your answer.
Hell no. I really wouldn't. But I never was presented it in college.
Yeah.
In college, I truly don't think I would have done it because.
Nah, he'd have done it.
Yeah. But then you gotta pick your money school prior. Like,
no, you could pick it, and it's so crazy now. I could do my first year, get paid $1 million, second year get paid another $1 million, third, and as long as I'm playing on that field and my play reflects what these teams want, they're gonna pay, and it's amazing. It's the best thing that's ever happened for college athletes.
Wow. Another big shift that happened for college athletes and athletes around the world is sports betting and the legalizing of that. How have you seen that affect players and your league in specific?
I would say in the NFL, obviously sports betting is big. I would say that, you know, there have been a couple guys who kind of got caught up in the, you know, obviously you can't bet on your sport. It messes up the integrity of the game. But as far as, you know, the fandom, I think it gives fans, you know, more to root for. It makes them more engaged. It makes them more, like, now that there's sports betting, guys in L.A. might actually care. You know, if you're in a big city like Hollywood and you're sports betting, of course you're going to care more about that team. I think there is, you know, still a despair in that final cut of the money being generated through sports betting. I think that should be that should be dispersed a little bit more fairly.
And that's from whatever.
Talk about the
betting.
Talk about the ownership, because, like, you know, in every league, I assume it's the same for the NBA. The commissioners and the owners kind of put together the legislation around the licensing around the sports betting. So win, lose, or draw, every team gets a cut. Every ownership gets a cut of the sports betting, no matter how bad or how good their team does. So I think that should be a split for the players, right? The same way that win, lose, or draw, it shouldn't be, you know, obviously it shouldn't be to mess up the integrity of the game. You shouldn't get more if somebody bets on you, all that kind of BS. But when you talk about the overall league itself, it should be, you know, it should definitely be split up between obviously players and owners.
Yo, after doing it, I really keep forgetting this man 23, dog.
Appreciate
I really
that,
keep
man.
Forgetting that. But
Phil,
I think
Phil upgraded him.
Yeah,
I think Phil and all the OGs, man.
Yeah, hanging with 50-year-olds.
All the OGs
with money. Hanging with 50s with money. Well, you know what I'm saying? But it's crazy. But do you feel like it's a testament to that? Like
having your OGs around, man, asking questions and, you know, really receiving them. I was just a guy. I was always, my hand was up asking questions, and, you know, I always kind of hung around the older crowd. And, you know, it is tough now because obviously everybody that's 50 is going to die when I'm 50. So, but it's the truth. So I'm not going to have no friends. Yeah, my bad. But it's a tough reality that by the time it's my turn to get old, I won't have any friends my age.
This guy is wild.
Nah, it's the truth. So trust me, I'm still hanging out with people my age because I got to remember, you know. I got to remember.
You got to remember.
Hey, exactly. My senior year of high school, I didn't have no friends because all my friends had graduated and gone on. And I was just kind of stuck right in the middle.
I just think it's cool to see, like, I just remember myself at 23. I would, like, I don't even think I knew how much money I had. My brother, early on, we discussed with my financial planner that he only need half, just save, do this, do that, but I didn't see it. I didn't think about it. Everything was basic. I'd be like, man, can I get a Jeep? They knowing, like, bro, you could have got a Jeep week one. Like, you could have got a Jeep before you got your first check if you wanted it. But, you know what I'm saying? Go ahead. Yeah, you could get a Jeep. They like, I think you could get it. Yeah, they was talking to me like it was a Ferrari. Like, I think you could get it, like, type of thing. But it's cool to see somebody that at 23, you know what's going on. You know what's, it seems like you read your own contract. It just seems like you've been in those rooms and had those conversations that a lot of those conversations at 23, not only did I not have them, not get invited into the room, I didn't want to. Like, I wasn't eager to know. I was just trying to hoop. You know what I'm saying? Like, I know a lot of people that focus on that. It's just cool to see somebody on top of their game as well as aware of everything that's going on and still fighting for guys that are coming after him to be able to make more.
You know, I think I've always been a guy to cut out the middleman, right? You know, obviously you've been in the league for forever, so you understand that before you get your check, there are so many people that step on it before you even see it. So it's like, how can you minimize paying all of these unnecessary people, you know? And it's by educating yourself and kind of, you know, passing it. And now, obviously, with the internet and everything else is becoming more accessible, the access to information is there. You just got to seek it and, you know, implement it.
So you're a Google guy.
Oh, big. Now I'm a TikTok guy. Anything you want to find, just look on TikTok.
Look,
it'll show you.
Yeah, and it's about a minute videos, got colors, pictures.
Everything you need.
All that. They got everything for you. As your career has progressed, how's your role in the locker room changed?
Man, so it's gotten different. Like we say, the turnover in the league is so fast. You know, you talk about getting rid of guys, bringing guys in. You know, now this is going into my third season, so you talk about coming in, being 21 as a rookie, to now being 23 and I'm a vet, you know, or one of the vets. You know, there are a couple guys obviously that have been there for a long time, but for the most part, you know, it's a new team and we probably got one of the more younger teams in the NFL. So, you know, guys are looking at me as a leader. And then even my GMs and coaches, they were rookies on our team when they came in. So I was their first draft class. So they're kind of looking at me to be a pillar of the organization. So just trying to represent the right way and understanding that, you know, every gem that I've kind of got from my OGs is meant for me to pass down and to, you know, keep it going.
You ever feel pressure just because you're so young still?
I try not to think about my age just because, you know, the greatest.
Nigga could have fooled me, boy. I tell you, you could have fooled me, brother. All these old jokes you got, boy, you could have fooled me.
Exactly, though, but it's because, you know, when you want to be great, all of the greatest people are older. You know, there's not too many rookies that are in that they're considering the greatest of all time.
Yeah, you see the example.
You know, so it's like if I want to be where they are, I have to emulate the path that they've taken. And if I can skip over all of the pitfalls and all of the adversity, right, by just staying diligent and doing the right thing, then so be it.
I love the way you worded that. You want to talk about that running back stuff?
Oh, yeah. We talked about it a lot before the show.
Yeah.
But there's a lot of talk about the free agent market and running backs and how they're supposed to be getting paid a certain amount and they're not as a player.
What's your take on, you know, running backs being undervalued in the front office?
So, like you say, as a player, you see, obviously, we've played the our biggest heroes for those who watch football or don't watch football are running backs, right? So when you talk about NIL, Reggie Bush, when you talk about every running back that you've ever known in the NFL is probably the biggest name or biggest face, and they're usually the face of the franchise. And it's like when you talk about how undervalued they are in the longevity of their careers and of the franchise, it's sad. You know, now from a business perspective, I get it. They're the only person on the field with 11 guys trying to hurt them every play. So I can understand how you're trying to protect your investment. But, you know, I think when you're building team chemistry and you're building, you know, a group of individuals that all have to be on the same page to win or have the same mindset to win, that has to be reflected from the ownership and from, you know, the top down. You know, so I think that it's a tough sledding for running backs, but I think if they continue to unite and the teams on a player scale continue to unite, things will eventually change.
Do you think it's going to get better or worse in the next, like, 2 or 3 years?
Man, it always gets worse before it gets better.
So you think it's going to
get
worse?
It always gets worse before it gets better. Even right now, you know, there are a lot of running backs trying to get paid. There are a lot of free agents right now trying to get paid. So this is going to be a pretty scary year for a lot of them. You know, when you talk about trying to get a long-term contract, but I think this will set the precedent for, you know, the upcoming future.
Yeah, I remember when they started doing that with the NBA, the mid-level contract started just getting weeded out. And then it was like everybody's either max or minimum. You need 3 max guys at minimum, and that was the formula, you know, and everybody switched to that. So I get what you're saying about it. Get worse before it get better. Before they work it out, they're like, let's try it this way. They'll be like, all right, this don't work. And then the running backs could be the highest paid.
Yeah.
But it definitely got to get worse. I get what you're saying. what do you imagine for yourself after you're done playing, if you've even looked that far?
Retired Tibbs.
Yeah, because your ability to switch it up, remarkable. Not a lot of players can do it. Not a lot of guys take off their jersey and are able to make you believe it as a businessman. You know what I'm saying? That's why a lot of them, after they're done playing, they're sort of like in a search for who they really are, kind of thing.
Kind of like identity crisis.
I don't see that in you. What do you see for yourself?
Well, first, you know, I really have to separate my identity from my career, right? You talk about being able to understand that this is something that I've been, you know, afforded a great opportunity with, obviously being blessed with the ability, but then understanding that, you know, it's not for long, right? And knowing that when it does come a time that I got to step away from the game, I got to be prepared. So me personally, I want to make all of my decisions now for the future. So understanding and getting equity, making the right investments, saving, you know, you can't out-invest bad spending habits, right? So making sure that my spending habits are right. And just understanding that when I retire from the NFL, I want to retire from work. I don't want to have to, you know, start all over because I got a mansion that now the checks don't, you know, add up to the bills. You know, so just that perspective on legacy and understanding that right now is the most cash flow that I'll ever get in my life, and playing sports is the most cash flow I ever get. So just setting that up right and making sure it's safe and that it's constantly making money. Yeah, so not really having a plan B, but having multiple plan A's.
I love that. I love that. See, Kobe said make more eggs. He said more plan A's, no plan B.
Yeah. Like mine's is better.
Oh, yeah, you got any other mentors that you could highlight?
Being in LA, you know, you would assume that it's a lot of people, but other than, you know, the uncles and the coaches and the kind of lower level people that were in my life, you know, I kind of made sure that I looked at, I seek the information. So how you bring up, you know, like a LeBron, like a Maverick Carter, how they did it, and then understanding like, okay, I can emulate that because it's all public information, right? You can see what everybody's pretty much doing. So it's kind of taking those gems and nuggets, applying them to yourself, and then making sure that, you know, I'm visible and tangible. Being here today, I appreciate you guys for having me, but this is just another opportunity to get in front of, you know, a bunch of beautiful and well-decorated people that eventually one day I could go into business with, or, you know, they might want to invest in me.
Planting seeds.
Real talk, yeah. Planting seeds. But what's cool about it is, like, again, we were taught to try and do that, but we was all very weary about how to do it. It's like he said, like, the education behind it, like, we need to encourage more young guys to do that, like, chase the information, like he's saying. Go out there and chase information, figure out ways that you can sit in these seats and know what you're supposed to be doing, not be told what you're supposed to be doing. Because I feel like it's the same thing with somebody telling you to take out the trash. It's like, if you was already going to take out the trash and somebody told you take out the trash, you no longer want to take out the trash. Because it's like, now it was like a mandatory thing, even though I was going to do it anyway. Like, you think it's because of you now, so I'm more reluctant to do it. And I think that it's cool that he's coming out here and you've done that. I like what you said. You leaned on your early pillars of having your uncles. You know what I'm saying? People lean on their father, their first high school coach. Like my high school coach and my father, that was big for me, just leaning on them, talking to them about things they're going through, talking about things that I'm facing, and then finally dealing with a problem that I bring to my father. And he said, hey, man, you done went a little further than I've gone. It's time for you. I can help you.
Yeah.
But I don't know what to do.
Yeah, you got to go seek more
yeah,
information.
Yeah, you got to do this information on your own. I haven't gone this fast, brother. Yeah, like, exactly. I ain't going to lie to you.
That's
you
what I was going to ask. You have a situation similar to that?
Of course, yeah. I'm a first generation college graduate, millionaire, first Come generation. On. Yeah.
Thank first you. Generation everything.
Yeah, so you talk about like now, that's the pressure, to be honest, when you're the first one, and it's like, okay, you know, the ball was in my hand, I got to make the shot type thing, where it's like, you know, there's really no more room for mistakes or errors. So it kind of kept me on that yellow brick road, and now, you know, being able to live in the moment and, you know, kind of seize it while everybody's answering the call, you know, that's kind of the beauty of it.
Do you feel like you know, you're the teacher now for a lot of people in your family?
Yeah,
just
man.
Just being able to educate them. You feel like an educator?
And I keep seeking more information, man, and you know, now I sound so well spoken because I've kind of told this same story 1,000 times. But man, it's been a long journey to even get here, and now it's like it just so happened that I was wearing this. You're like you say, I look like I should blend in. I should be on IT or something.
Yeah,
but
man.
You know, you talk about just putting in the work, man, putting in the footwork and staying dedicated, and you know, continuously wanting to see the people around me better themselves, and knowing that I individually have the access to the information. And it's like, it's only right that I be a vessel to everyone else, and you know, kind of continue to share it and dish it out.
I love that.
Shout out to him. Cause,
right.
Whew, that's
the problem with our world.
That just seems overwhelming. Like,
that's the problem with our world, though. People don't share information.
I mean, information is power. Everybody know it. That's how you.
But once you get it, people don't like giving it out.
It's guarded.
They hold it.
You got gatekeepers. Gatekeepers of information. It's cool to have people that are willing to go get it and not only come there and share it, but share it multiple ways. Keep beating it over your head. Like, come and implement it for your kids. Like, come do a camp and really give time to talk to the kids for real.
Yeah, be tangible, yeah.
Yeah, those things are always, always welcome. Because we at South by Southwest with Sportico, what's one prediction you have for the future of sports business?
The future of sports business?
What's the future?
I think there are going to be a lot more individual brands. And I say that as in, the big companies are kind of going to take a back seat to the individuals. And I say that in a sense that we no longer, and when you think about, like, it's almost like the culture of self, right? So you think about, like, everybody wants to be a part of a group. Everybody wants to be kind of a part of a clique. And those cliques are represented by people. You know what I'm saying? So the big faces in the sports industry are going to start being the leading kind of faces of these brands. You know, when you, for example, when you talk about the Nike check, you think about LeBron, you think about Kobe, you think about, you know, Serena Williams, you think about all of these individuals who make up this brand. And without them, what would the brand really be? And, you know, it can go on across every kind of board, but when it comes to podcasting, when it comes to all these things, I think that the power is going to be within the athlete, and that, you know, we need to continue, and if you're the first to jump on the train of the athlete and using their likeness, I think you'll kind of be ahead of the game. Although it's obviously already been used, I think that's going to continue to be the trend for the future.
I love that.
Well, we're going to wrap this up before we get you out of here, man. We like to ask all of our guests, what are you working on improving about yourself right now in your personal life?
Man, I would say the improvement is just the consistency. You know, as we kind of go through our careers, we spend the most time at work, and we kind of forget that everything kind of coincides. So when you look at your home life directly reflects what you do on the court. You know, so or what you do in the field or what you do in the office. So for me, I think it's kind of making sure all my eggs are aligned, right? And that when you talk about my speech and my family life and my relationship and my, you know, the list can go on of every microcosm of my life, but making sure that they reflect the same message and the same ideologies and that, you know, I can be consistent and diligent in all of them so that I can be where I want to be, right? There's no more room for mistakes or errors or, you know, staying complacent. You know, you got to keep growing and keep getting better. So I think that's it. Just, you know, sharpening all the tools in every facet of my life.
I like that. I like that.
Is there anything we want to promote or shout out? Let people know.
Man, I'm just happy to be here, to be honest. It's a blessing to be here. And I would say, you know, to the crowd out here, keep paying homage to the people at the top. Keep helping the people coming under you because that's only going to make your company better. Keep reaching out. Keep collaborating. You know, the fist is stronger than the finger because it's five fingers sticking together. So keep doing it as a unit and keep pushing.
Okay.
Yeah,
you like boy, that you one? Get a pre-game
you
speech.
Like that right?
Yeah. Yeah. He wanted him yeah. before the game. He get a pre-game speech to get everybody hyped before they start smacking helmets.
I appreciate y'all for listening, though, for those that were here, man. It's been a It's dope to see everybody here, and it's been a blessing.
All right, Kay, let them know where they can follow your career. Give them your IG, your Twitter.
Yeah, I mean, if just watch the NFL. I play for the New York Giants, number five. Go buy a jersey.
Seek
go support.
The information out.
Yeah, Instagram is my name, Kayvon Thibodeau. Kayvon Thibodeau, go find
those,
me.
You don't owe them
if you,
nothing.
If you own a company, let's send me an email. We can definitely collaborate. I do partnerships, no sponsorships.
I love it.
I love equity. So if you have some equity to give out, call me.
Hey, man, as always, thank you.
Yeah,
he's dead serious. That's why I love it. Yeah. As always, man, thank y'all for rocking with us on Iman Amongst Men. I am Iman Shumpert.
And I'm Ari Shumpert.
Thanks to our guest, Kayvon Thibodeau. Give it up.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Now, for everybody at home, make sure to rate, review, and subscribe wherever you listen to your podcast.
And to watch the full video episodes, you're going to head over to Uninterrupted YouTube and click subscribe.
And until next time, y'all, we are gone.